Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spirit Seeker Hour. Spirit Seeker Hour is your chance to delve into the world of your inner spirit. The Spirit Seeker Hour is brought to you by Spirit Seeker Magazine. Go to www.spiritseeker.com to find out more. And now, here's Cindy Meyer.
Welcome, and this is the weekly Spirit Seeker Hour brought to you by Spirit Seeker Magazine. And as the intro said, you can read the magazine online at www.spiritseeker.com. Tonight we are going to have a two-hour show, and we are probably going to be doing two-hour shows on a regular basis because there are so many people doing fabulous work throughout the world. You know, we interview a lot of people from the U.S., but we're actually interviewing more and more authors and people from Canada and into Europe because guess what? The whole world is awake right now. So tonight we are going to be hearing about shamanism by Dana Robinson, and then we will, then the second part of the show will start at 8 o'clock, and that will be hearing from Dr. Eric Pearl with the Reconnection and his latest book, Solomon Speaks. So it is, you know, exciting for me to interview Dana Robinson. I've heard about him many years over the years, and always good things. And he and his wife are doing this fabulous work. And so tonight, you can press 1 on your phone, and that will let my producer know that you have a question. So if you've always wanted to know, you know, if you've heard of shamanism or you have a particular question as we go along, that's all you have to do is just press 1 on your phone, and then my producer will bring you onto the call. So, Dana, are you there?
Yes, I am, Cindy. How are you tonight?
You know what? I'm a little rushed. to be totally honest, we were stuck in traffic and it's raining in St. Louis, and I left my cell phone at home and I thought, oh my goodness, am I going to make it on the air? So I had my son's cell phone poised. But other than that, Dana, I am fabulous.
Good, just high stress and having a nervous breakdown, but other than that, you're doing great.
Everything's fine. But
well, we're not having rain here in the Eastern Shore of Maryland. It's the most perfect day, cloudless. The highs around mid-70s, and the low tonight will be in the low 50s, and it's brilliant, and it's the most beautiful summer I can remember in ever in 50 years here in Maryland.
You know, we had this summer, I actually wrote about this in my column, we had this summer that wasn't, you know? I mean, really, in June, the weather was, you know, so unusually cool. And but then, you know, I really shouldn't have probably complained because then we did go into the humid Midwest weather. But, yes, the weather patterns are all changing. It's in the 70s here in St. Louis, and it'll be in the 60s by tonight. So
yeah, fantastic.
I know. Windows open. So I know. So, Dana, tell us how this journey started. Were you a young man who was drawn to nature, or just, you know, share with us a snapshot so we can see into how this work evolved with you?
Okay. Well, now let's, you know, shamanism really is probably the most ancient spiritual practice on the planet, and it's really all about direct contact with helping spirits that will enable the shaman to promote healing in other people, enable the shaman to get information through divination techniques, and that often involves consulting these wonderful, compassionate, helping spirits that the shaman works with. And so it's really all about spirituality, and I was drawn to spirituality when I was a kid, or really a young man, several years ago. And so I remember my parents would not go to church, but I would unilaterally take myself to church because I knew that there was something there that was happening, something on the invisible level that was about love, about power, and goodness. And so, you know, I think that feeling never left me. And as I grew older, into my teen years, I sort of forgot about that. But then in my 20s, particularly after reading the books of Carlos Castaneda, I was drawn to this other kind of spirituality. Now, of course, in Castaneda's books, and I read the first five, and then I kind of lost interest in what he was writing about. Those five books are take place in the Sonoran Desert. It's really about the natural world and spirits in the middle world, and in the shamanism that we teach at the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, we focus on the great compassionate and wise spirits that dwell in what we call the lower world and the upper world. But that spirit and that Castaneda's spirituality was really about sorcery, and so a much different kind of slant than what my interest was, but yet it was exciting to read about that. So I had this interest in visions, in direct spiritual contact, and finally, Michael Harner came along at just the right time in my life, and that was back in 1981, and I took the basic workshop, which is the first workshop that anyone would take with the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, which Michael Harner founded. And Michael Harner is still alive, and his latest book just came out, his first book in 30 years, Cave and Cosmos, a tremendous book that explains a lot about shamanism. But in that basic workshop in 1981, which, by the way, Cindy, I remember very clearly, even though it was some time ago, I was introduced to the experience of direct contact with these wonderful spirits that offer people so much support. And I would say that was a major turning point in my life.
You know, you just know, like when, it's hard to put into words, but you just know when you're on the right path and like these doorways are starting to open and you're like, oh, this.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, actually, yeah, before running into Michael Harner, I also experienced a lot of joy through my involvement with charismatic Christianity, because there's a lot of power there and there's a lot of love. And, you know, I haven't turned my back on those experiences at all. But I think shamanism actually encompasses those experiences that I had with charismatic Christianity. I also partook of the work of Sri Bhagwan Rajneesh, now known as Osho, kind of a controversial figure, but a very, very bright man who developed some wonderful meditations that we do even to this day occasionally, very active, even aerobic kinds of meditations that really, really stir things up and are quite purgative and transformational. So, and yes, those seem right, but you know, after that first weekend with Michael Harner, I said, wow, this is something I really want to immerse myself in for a long, long time, and here we are 32 years later, and I find it continually interesting and satisfying, and you know, I owe a lot to my helping spirits, who, fortunately for me, are on my side and help me, I think, even when I don't know that they're helping me.
Right. So that invisible power assisting that you know, we know it's there. I mean, mm-hmm. But you know, the article that you contributed this month, I love the title, Shamanism for Creative Solutions. Mm-hmm. So I know you've been on this path for a long time, and I know you've taught over 400 workshops for the, you know, the Institute, which is pretty amazing.
Might be about 600, actually.
That's a lot.
Who's counting? Who's counting, right?
Well, to have your mentor and teacher after 30 years pop out a new book, it's like you know something's changing because,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, so I'm really I knew something happened in your childhood. I was like, okay, what? You know, and here you are okay, I'm going to find a way. I mean, I was the same way. You know, I was raised in the Catholic faith, but if I ever had an opportunity to go to a friend's church, I'd be like, sure. You know, my parents would still have me insist, well, that doesn't count if you went to the Lutheran church. You still have to go. You have to do both. You know, it was kind of an interesting intrigue. But I learned things from my childhood with the rosary beads that then when I, you know, found my way to Sufism beads and, you know, Hinduism beads, you know, the prayer beads, I thought, this just feels so, you know, familiar, shall we say. But
yeah.
But still, earth-based, any kind of earth-based spirituality, a lot of people have never experienced it. They've grown up in cities, they've grown up in houses, they go to work, you know. I mean, there are people who have never even camped, who have never been out underneath the stars, you know. So let's talk just a little bit about the earth-based part of shamanism.
Well, let's see. Number one, I think the quintessential shaman understands that there's a sacredness to everything that is, you know, and so and there is intelligence in everything that there is. Now, there's a poem that comes from the Chukchi people of Siberia. It's called Things the Shaman Sees. And here, let me. It's the only poem I've ever memorized, and it will take 1 minute to say it, so bear with me. But it really gives you an idea of the connection between the shaman and the world around the shaman. It goes something like this. On a steep river bank, there's a voice that speaks. I've seen the master of that voice. He bowed to me. I spoke with him. He answers all of my questions. Everything that is alive. Little gray bird, little blue breast, sings in a hollow bough. She calls her spirits, dances, sings her shaman songs. Woodpecker on a tree, he's got a drum. And the tree shakes, cries out like a drum when the axe bites its side. All these things answer my call. Everything that is alive. The lantern walks around. The walls of this house have tongues. Even this bowl has its own true home. The hides asleep in their bags were up talking all night. Antlers on the graves rise and circle the mounds, while the dead themselves get up and go visit the living ones. Everything that is alive. Now, and everything that is has intelligence. You know, the walls of this house have tongues. I can talk to the walls. Now, if I'm talking to the walls 24 hours a day, probably I have a problem. You know, I'm certainly not paying the rent, okay? So I got to pay the rent. I've got to take care of ordinary reality. But the shaman is someone who understands that we're not alone. In fact, we've got company everywhere, and there's intelligence everywhere. And so, of course, this engenders a tremendous respect for all living things, and, of course, everything that is alive. So you respect your automobile. You respect your garden. You respect the squirrels, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, I remember, and I don't think I've ever said this to anyone. I remember when I was probably eight or so. Now, my father was a career Army officer. We moved around a lot. And moved and lived in some pretty interesting places in Germany and the Azores, right in the middle of the Atlantic
wow.
Ocean, and so on and so forth. Yeah, and Tidewater, Virginia. We lived in the woods for 3 years. So these things have an effect on a young person. But I remember in our travels, we were visiting a friend of my parents while we were en route to someplace, and they had a collie dog. And I remember just playing with the dog, running around, and I really, really understood that he understood so much and had such intelligence, plus, you know, such a beautiful heart. And when I think about the quintessential shaman, I think about someone who understands these things but also has a very big heart. Wants to help other people and has and understands that he or she can be a conduit, we say the hollow bone or the hollow tube between the people, and by the people I mean the birds, the humans, the ones with the who swim underwater, the trees and so on and so forth, the people and the spirits, and the shaman can be the instigator, we could say almost the carrier of the healing, the orchestrator in some ways of the healing that the spirits provide the people.
So, wow.
Yeah, where do you go with that? You know, I mean, it's...
Well,
now,
you know, what would you just realize that everything is part of everything.
Yes, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, you know, hey, listen, one of my favorite lines in all the movies that I've seen, you know, thousands. I don't see modern movies but Play Misty for me with that Clint Eastwood thing,
yes,
filmed out in Carmel, California. Pretty scary movie, wonderful. His fellow DJ comes on the air and say, hey, and he's just the jazziest kind of guy, African-American guy playing this jazz, and he says, hey, everything is everything. You know, it's just such a great line because it's
right.
So true.
It's all, we're all, and especially these times, you know, where, you know, it used to be, I mean, I remember Carlos Castaneda's books because I worked in this bookstore when I was like, you know, in high school. And you know, that's how I moved out of St. Louis, is I actually helped open a bookstore north of Chicago. And, mm-hmm, you know, I was like, you know, 18 years old. I mean, I just loved books. And at that time, we could get any book that we wanted that was in paperback. We just ripped the cover off, and the cover would be sent back to the publisher, and they'd get credit. So we, mm-hmm, as, you know, employees for B. Dalton Booksellers got, I mean, the people who helped me move in my 20s were like, mm-hmm, how can anyone have so many books? But they were my, mm-hmm, friends, you know. I mean, mm-hmm, I mean, Siddhartha, Hermann Hesse, you know, all, you know, Atlas Shrugged. I mean, all of the books that, you know, just kind of spoke to you. And I can remember Carlos Castaneda. I mean, the covers were actually beautiful too, you know.
Oh, they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like, you know,
very
that
popular.
Was like Eric Byrne and, you know, Maxwell Maltz and all. That was like when people really started waking up, shall we say.
Well, it was quite a time, and anyone who's listening now who isn't old enough to remember those times or was born after those times, I have to say, those really were the days. And because change, evolution, spiritual seeking and experimentation. Of course, the hallucinogens were opening people's minds at the time too. I mean, it was such a time of ferment. It was so exciting. The rock music, as people looking back on that time now would say, you know, there were like four or five albums a week coming out that were absolutely incredible. And now it's like one or two a year.
I used to ride my bicycle 2 miles to go buy 45s when they first came out. Like, you know, and I remember the Jimi Hendrix, the Doors. I mean, you know, I remember seeing Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Cat Stevens and, you know, just like crying because the music spoke to you, you know, in a way that, you know, I mean, and I know the young people today I have a 15-year-old, you know, and I have kids and, you know, stepkids in their 40s that I raised. And so it's like, you know, it's just interesting. And, you know, my mother, I was very blessed with parents who love music. So I grew up with Ray Charles and the Ink Spots and, you know, Ray Conniff. And, I mean, I grew up with having a fabulous stereo. And but my mother, when Pink Floyd came out, she loved Pink Floyd. I was like, you know, it was kind of interesting that I had a mother who loved Pink Floyd, you know. And,
well, she understood quality, you know.
Yeah,
so, I mean, quality is quality.
I mean,
so,
Moody Blues, On We Go, yes.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, don't forget the Beatles, please.
Oh, please. Yeah. I remember I was like, you know, 8 years old, and I was at the Valentis, my cousins, and my cousin says, we have to watch this, you know, and everybody, Ed Sullivan, black and white TVs, here we are. And it's like, you knew in that moment, I mean, I saw them the first time they were on that TV, you knew in that moment that things, that was it. Everything changed. You know
right,
what I mean? I know you know what I mean.
The
so,
Ed Sullivan show, yeah, right. The first,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, he found talent that, you know, was just amazing. So for you, here you are, this young man seeking, looking, and the charismatic Christianity. I mean, my mother had cancer in 1978, and then she had it again in 1979. But in 78, she was told that she needed to have chemo 1 week out of every month. for 2 years and all this other stuff. She had the faith healers, the charismatic healers from the Catholic Church, come and pray for her right there in the middle of this hospital room. Mm-hmm. And the next day, after she had one chemotherapy treatment, she said, anything that makes me this sick is not good for me. I'm done. Mm-hmm. And she lived, like, you know, another 30 years after that or something. And so,
fantastic.
But it was the faith healers, and she had full faith in these charismatic, and what was Dr. McNutt or someone, I forget the name, but there was a, I don't remember it, but there was a leader, and she read everything he wrote, and she just totally was full faith with it. And, you know, the doctor's office actually called her and called me and said, your mother is, you know, allowing these people to, like, dissuade her from she's going to die. And I said, you know what? If you call me again, I'm going to report you. Yeah. It's my mother's life. Mm-hmm. And if this is what she chooses, and I think this, you know, is probably her path to, like, you know, somehow demonstrate this full faith, you know. And if it didn't, then that was her choice too. But you know, I can understand, you know, that collective consciousness when people come together like that and you know, spirit steps in, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you know, I've learned so much from Michael Harner. He is my teacher with a, with a capital T here in the, what we call the middle world for sure. And I really learned so much from him, and he makes a point of saying, you know, the shaman works on the spirit level to promote healing, but they understand the benefit, at least the benefit of a holistic approach. So the shaman takes care of the spiritual side of healing, and the MDs or the acupuncturists or, let's see, the chiropractors, the Reiki practitioners and so on and so forth can take care of another side of the healing process. But then again, your mother made a major choice there. And, you know, it reminds me of a guy, I won't mention any names, who had a very serious cancer diagnosis, and he decided to absolutely not engage in any standard approaches to healing, and he went the spiritual approach solely, as I understand it, and he was able to beat it. So, you know, and it's interesting, you know, some of those case studies where people pray in the present for people who were sick 10 years ago, and there's studies where there's another group who weren't prayed for, and it so happens that the group prayed for 10 years ahead of time in the future, that this group was affected very positively by those prayers that happened 10 years after. Yeah, I mean, this blows your mind, doesn't it?
Well, because in spirit, there is no time.
Mm-hmm. Well, there we go. And I mean, so, that sort of proves it, doesn't it?
Right. It's like, excuse me, in a nanosecond, 10 years can be lived or used. You know, it's like, you know, it was so interesting. Mm-hmm. When I woke up this morning, you know, I normally, you know, set an alarm. Sometimes I'll set my phone, but I set this alarm, and I don't know, I always wake up before it goes off. It's, you know, kind of like I'm on the cycles when I know I need to awaken. But today I woke up, and at 5 o'clock it was working. I looked at it, and then the next time I looked at it, it was completely blank, and I thought, is the electricity off? I didn't hear any storm. And I reached over, I turned the light on, and I'm like, that's interesting. And then I thought, you know what, this is going to be that kind of a day. I just knew it. I was excited about the interviews tonight. I was excited about, you know, the other things I had scheduled today. Even though I had some things in the last couple of days that were kind of dicey, shall we say. I have a 15-year-old. And, you know, it brings lots of opportunities for really looking at my stuff that's being reflected back. And so I thought, gosh, I gave my mom a hard time, you know. So, okay, I'm getting it back. Okay, but how do I do it differently? But when that clock was off, I thought, you know what, you need to just throw this time out the window today, because, and it's interesting how all day, I knew I would be here on time. If I wasn't, I'd use the cell phone. But it was still just like this very out-of-the-box thing with time today. And I think that when you're talking about the middle worlds, and I would like you to elaborate, middle, lower, and upper worlds, and how all of these come together in the journeying And and especially with this workshop that, you know, I want to mention that is coming, you teach them all over, it looks like, but, you know, we're lucky enough to have you in the Midwest in St. Louis the first week in October, October 5th and 6th. But,
that's
you
right.
know, Dana, tell us what the difference is in the worlds and what you do in these workshops where, because I, you know, I just know they're profound.
Yeah, well, and you're going to be there, and so we really look forward to having you in the workshop. Is absolutely a go, and I have to tell you, we've had quite a good response to this workshop. So, all systems are go. So, now, you know, we could really give a definition of what the shaman is. I think that's important to do. Now, for many years, I would give the following definition. Now, it's changed a little in light of Michael Harner's thinking that really came out in Cave and Cosmos, his latest book that actually came out just this past April. So in the past, I've defined a shaman as someone who utilizes an altered state of consciousness, which we can achieve in various ways. We use the sonic driver, the monotonous percussion of the drum, a drum beat, to affect that change in consciousness. So the shaman, in his or her work, utilizes this change of consciousness, takes shamanic journeys, that is, leaves ordinary reality behind, flies or travels in one way or another out to the spirit worlds, specifically the lower world and the upper world, but we could also say the middle world. The middle world being the spiritual component of the physical universe. We'll talk about the upper and lower worlds in a moment. And, okay, now look, back in the 60s, many of us were changing consciousness using not the sonic driver, but hallucinogens. We were tripping out. I don't know if we were really taking journeys, but we were definitely tripping out. We weren't shamans. We were just, you know.
Curious.
We were tripping. But the shaman works with specific goals in mind, healing or divination, typically. And in the process of his or her work, there are significant results that ensue. We could say miracles occur. So this is a person who really gets significant results from his or her partnership with the helping spirits. And now, actually, Michael Harner has actually given us a kind of a broader definition of the shaman, which I think we really like. And as he says in Cave and Cosmos, while the work of the shamans encompasses virtually the full gamut of known spiritual practices, shamanism is universally characterized by an intentional change in consciousness to engage in purposeful two-way interaction with the spirits. So, yeah, the shaman can act as a medium. The shaman can act as a deep possessor. The shaman journeys to the upper and lower worlds to meet with helping spirits to promote healing one way or another, and people who come to the shaman who want help. The people also come to the shaman with important problems, issues, questions. The shaman can act as a go-between between these wise and compassionate spirits that the shaman is aligned with. For instance, a helping spirit could be in an animal form. So this we call this the power animal. And the shaman may go to a power animal and request help for someone who's come to the shaman asking for help, or may present the question that someone has come to the shaman with to the power animal. The power animal shares its insights. These are highly intelligent beings. The universe is full of intelligence, and certainly the power animals, these wonderful spirit beings that give us power, which is really protection, amongst other things. And so these beings can help the shaman help others. Now, the upper world and lower world, these are realms that are outside of time. I call the upper world, amongst other things, the land up above. Now, if you take a shamanic journey, okay, typically, okay, the drum will be going, so we've got the sonic driver that gets us into an altered state of consciousness. We're in a relaxed physical position, typically lying down on our backs, but we could be seated. Heck, we could be standing. You know, we could even act out a journey, although in our workshops we're going to just be still and typically lying down. we could take a journey to the planet Mars. Okay, that's still the middle world. That's not the upper world. The upper world is land up above. Now, stories that remind us of the upper world, let's see. Heaven, the land of Oz, Never Never Land. It goes on in Mount Olympus, all right? The lower world, the land below. We're not talking about a journey to the center of the earth. We're talking about the land below, and various indigenous cultures have seen the land below as a place that their peoples go to at the point of death. We could say for them, that's their heaven. The Roman people, upon death, would go to the land below, right? And so these are realms of beauty and wonder, and actually you'll get some pretty detailed descriptions of these realms in Cave and Cosmos. I know Michael Harner had certain misgivings about sharing the accounts of some of his students dealing with these realms, so only because it's nice to go into these into the basic workshop, or the training that you'll be attending in early October, with no preconceptions. But I think you can read these things and then drop your preconceptions still and just go in with just an open mind as to what you will discover. Because, you know, we're not looking for agreement on what's in these realms. Our approach, which we call core shamanism, which really is a distillation of worldwide shamanism. You know, shamanism is this worldwide phenomenon, and there are certain practices, like the shamanic journey, for instance, and certain understandings that are common to all forms of shamanism. We're not looking for agreement in our approach to shamanism. We call it core shamanism. We just say, hey, you go, find out what's in these realms. We're here to tell you that there is help in these realms. We can say it's an animal form, maybe in the form of a human spirit of great power and wisdom, but you find your own helper. We won't even tell you what these places will look like, because you will see on a journey. Typically, they're a visual experience, but when we say shamanic seeing, that really includes engaging all of your senses, a sense of hearing, of touch, even of taste, and certainly of smell. And so the shamanic journey, which I feel, and others, I think Michael Harner certainly is on board with this, that it's the journey that really is the major activity of the shaman. Although not all shamans, okay, with this broader definition, will be journeying. I think I've lost my way in this,
it's okay.
But,
we were talking about the different worlds and how...
Yeah.
And how we line them up, and you know, I can remember this friend that I don't know, you know, I think I met her through the breathwork circles, you know, way back in, you know, we all did breathwork together, but she was from Australia, and she came from a lineage of Aboriginal shamans, and you know, I remember, you know, she was autistic and actually mute until age 9. She never said a word. And then when she came out of her, you know, she started talking. It was like age 9 or 10. And I remember when she was trying to explain to me, because I was like, what is it that you're doing? Because she was like pounding this drum and doing all this stuff. And, you know, and I was like, what was that? You know, I just experienced. And she said, I'll never forget it. She said, I am able to see all the different pieces or parts of a person, and I help put them all back together, like in a new way. And I was like, and you know, she had studied, you know, some of the, I think it was Sandra Ingerson, I think it was, who did the soul retrieval work, which, you know,
Ingerman,
a little bit different.
Yeah.
Yes, that's
yeah.
it. That's it. And that was, you know, she had studied with her and studied with other people in, you know, in Australia. And, you know, she had this experience on 9/11. She was in New York City. And she was supposed to do the didgeridoo for a fashion show in downtown Manhattan. And I know the apartment that she was in, because I've stayed in it. It's owned by a friend of ours. And, you know, we would all rent it when we went to New York City and do healing work. And so I know this. I know it. I know where it is. I know the windows, everything. And she said she woke up that morning and she heard, do your laundry. Like, what do you mean, do my laundry? This is a big opportunity. I'm doing this didgeridoo on this fashion show in Manhattan when people are coming into work from every angle. I'm not doing my laundry. I'm getting down to, like, you know, New York City, and she heard distinctly, do your laundry. And she's like, am I sabotaging? She did her little checklist, and she's like, you know what? I think I'm supposed to do my laundry and not do this thing. So she goes down into the basement of this high-rise building. She's down there doing her laundry. You know, she's listening, you know, not understanding it, but she's listening. And she hears this guy on a walkie-talkie. I don't know, something over, you know, at the World Trade Center. I don't know, something, you know, whatever. She comes upstairs. She turns on the TV. She's seen the one tower has gone down.
Right.
She looks out the window, and she sees the second plane coming by, and she sees the faces of all of the people in this plane. And she was, like, you know, booked for clients, and she thought, oh, my God, I have to pray for all of those people. She went and got her big drum. Let me add that. She went and got her big drum and a glass of orange juice, and she was going to go drum. And she's like, I have to pray for those souls who departed. Like, oh, my God. And then she's like, no, I have to pray for the loved ones back here. And in that moment between she went to the other side and back, her drum split in half, and the bottom of the orange juice glass just sheared off. Pew! Just like that. And, you know, she was down in the bowels of 9/11, you know, like she would not leave. She went down and helped all the firemen, and, you know, my other friends are calling, will you call Carrie and get her out of there? She's going to ruin her lungs. I'm like, you don't get it. She's, like, divinely protected. She's exactly where she needs to be at this moment. But, you know, how do you explain something like that? You know, and it's like, but this is the work that you're talking about where it's unexplainable, really. I mean, you can try. And
well,
you're doing
you
a
know,
good job
I've...
of it, by the way. But,
well,
but
I Krishna, the shaman might say, and well, an experience that you've described, I wouldn't even attempt to explain it, but there might be an explanation for it. But certainly in the work of the shaman is engaging the help of the helping spirits in order to really promote miraculous, what I would call, what ordinary people would call miraculous results. And so, you know, the one of the main thrusts of Michael Horner's latest book, Cave and Cosmos, is that the spirits are absolutely real. And when you look at the word shaman, which comes from the Tungus people of Siberia, so there's a tremendous tradition of shamanism in Siberia, translated, the word means he or she who knows. Now, it's not he or she who believes. Shaman knows that the spirits are real, amongst other things. And how does a shaman know that? Because a shaman has had direct experience with the spirits. They have revealed themselves to the shaman in various ways. And that makes it kind of easy to know that they're real when they, you know, basically, so to speak, they're knocking on your door.
Right.
And you can
and
let them in. You can let them in, or
daunted.
Even if you don't.
Maybe a little daunted at first until
first,
you understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but that's quite a story you tell about your friend there and on one of the seminal events of the 21st century.
Well, you know, and 10 of our next, 10 of the 20 clients that were scheduled that week had all lost people, you know, in that event. Mm-hmm. And she was exactly where, one other time she was in India with her girlfriend going to Kumbh Maya, you know, the Divine Mother Festival, and someone said, have you been to La La La? And she's like, no, I've heard of that. And they're like, you really should do that. And they're like, well, that's like, you know, 15, 20 miles back that way. And they're like, well, you're so close. You really ought to do it. And so she, you know, checked it to see, what should I do? And they made the decision to go back. Had they gone forward, there was an earthquake that came right where they would have been when it happened. And, you know, but it's just so interesting, you know, animals and nature know when things are going to happen way ahead of people oftentimes. You know, you can study the animals, and I'd love to talk about the animal part of this. I mean, today I had two hummingbirds outside my window, and you know, that's not unusual. I have these beautiful red flowers, hibiscus, and you know, other things they're attracted to. But these two hummingbirds came together and did a dance. It was like the most beautiful thing. I mean, they were like swirling, like almost in a figure eight, and I thought, wow.
Yes. Well, you know, I'm particularly fond of the hummingbirds, so we've got two feeders in front of our house here, and I mean, they come in mid-April, and unfortunately for us, but good for them, they're leaving probably any day now, you know, for parts south. But they are, they're little jewels. They're so intelligent, and they make such a beautiful little sound, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
When they're flying around. And, you know, I think, you know, through my involvement with the spirits, with shamanism, and becoming, I think, far more sensitized to the infinitude of miracles that we're immersed in here, you know, called the physical world, and all the creatures who live in this incredible blue planet hurtling through space and revolving at 1,000 miles an hour. You know, it's just these creatures are so incredible, you know, and I don't know how people have time to do nasty things to each other or to these animals. You know, I think there's a lack of sensitivity here, particularly in our culture, that's really quite alarming. I'm afraid it's getting a little worse. It's, you know, it's at the moment. But, you know, I think shamanism, I like to think of shamanism as, you know, though it's an ancient spiritual practice, it is actually the perfect spirituality for today's human being. Because, let's see, number one, it works, right? People do get helped in all kinds of ways by going to the shaman, but in practicing shamanism, people get helped as well. And it can be learned very quickly, and one can begin to employ the help of the spirits immediately to help themselves and to help other people. And so it's we could say it's the perfect spirituality for the fast food generation.
How funny. But yeah.
Yeah. So, fasten your seatbelt. We're looking forward to working with you in early October.
I know. I'm really.
Now, I don't know if you had. Do you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, I've heard of you and your wife for years doing this work, and I don't know how it is that our paths haven't crossed, but, you know, here we are. So.
Well, now, we haven't been to St. Louis for, you know, about 3 years, but no, my wife is, what can I say, you know, she's the most fantastic support that a guy could have, and a great human being, but she's also an avid reader, and an extensive reader in anthropology, amongst other subjects. So of the two of us, she's certainly the anthropologist, and she brings just a wealth of knowledge as well as spiritual experience to these workshops as she assists me. Yeah, I'm the official faculty member of the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, but my wife, Shana, does accompany me to all these workshops. So she's part of the team here.
How wonderful to be able to work with your partner and mm-hmm. just bring such great transformation and gifts to people. You know, I mean, and what I really like, Dana, is the way you are explaining this, that everyone has their personal journey, and mm-hmm. it's a very personal, spiritual-based, you know, system, shall we say. I don't know if system's the right
word. Certainly our approach to it is core shamanism. So we're not being culturally specific with what we're presenting to people. So, you know, you don't have to have the agreed-upon map of the lower world or the upper world or the agreed-upon main spirit helpers. Now, it's up to each person to find their way and find their own spiritual helpers. And believe me, they're not hard to find. These guys want to help us, and particularly animals. I think it's so curious that they want to help us in light of the horrible things that the human race does to the animals. But and Michael Horner's offered kind of an interesting explanation of that. I don't think I'll say it right now, but there's a reason that they have compassion for us, and it might be related to the compassion that we can have for the creatures who are on this planet now. And I think, you know, you do this work, it does promote compassion for all beings, not just the humans, but for all beings.
So Dana, you know, in all of these workshops and all of these, you know, amazing encounters with so many people all over, you know, you've taught in many diverse places. Can you share with us just, you know, one of the, I mean, I'm sure many stories will come to mind, but just whatever comes to mind, like a case study almost of someone who was just totally shifted and helped by this work.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can think of all kinds of people. I've seen people who are very shy and retiring and start to do this work, and after a number of trainings, but, you know, it's not just the trainings, it's applying what you learn in between trainings, and that means continue to connect with the helping spirits, help others whenever you can. We believe that when you help others using the help of the spirits, that they gift you with more power, and I mean power in the most positive sense. Actually, how would I define power? I would define power as energy plus intelligence plus love plus ethics, all the good stuff. And so, you know, you continue to connect with the spirits, you do these trainings, you learn more and more, and lo and behold, you gain self-confidence. And, you know, the confidence that you gain, it's really, yes, it's yours, but it's also the confidence of the spirits that not only do you hang out with or journey to through and hang out with through the journey, but you actually embody from time to time. You actually call them to you so that you can actually embody them here in the physical world from time to time. And so there is this union between these helping spirits of great power and wisdom and you. And believe me, that has an effect. You know, so there are, I think there are many stories of people really changing for the better. And Michael Harner has said, when you do shamanism, it makes you a better person. Now, there are stories of healing as well. And I've heard of people who've done the basic workshop and then gone off and tried to help people. And even after having just done the basic workshop, they're able to help people with the help of the spirits. Now, here's one case that I'll mention. There was a young man who came to one of our trainings in the year 2000. He was in his late 20s from England. He was just a wonderful guy, and he revealed to us that he had an aggressive brain tumor, and he had just a few months to live. And his sister was there with her husband from England, and I think they were there because, you know, they knew that it was getting near the end for this wonderful guy. And I told this guy, you know, would you be interested in my working for you and in some of the people who are here in this basic workshop working on your behalf after the workshop's over? And he said, yeah, it would be great. So we got together with him a number of times, and we were employing some various techniques that we learned in the basic workshop, and also that I imparted to the people who were trying to help him. And after a time, a few months, and he would be going to Duke University on a regular basis every couple months to have a brain scan, he said that the doctors had said that the brain tumor had shrunk 80%. And I said, to what do you attribute that? And he said, well, to the spiritual work that you guys have been doing. Now, we were just agents of the helping spirits. So, you know, we're not going to get a swelled head about this. We're not going to get onto an ego trip about this. Michael Harner has said, in fact, no one in their right mind would call themselves a shaman. You leave it to the people that you help to call you a shaman. And I would say, you don't get hung up on that label. Just try to help people utilizing the spirits. And so his condition improved. But you know what? In retrospect, 80% improvement isn't good enough when it comes to aggressive brain tumors. We want we want it to be gone. And so, you know, the story unfolded in a specific way. I think we should have worked harder on his behalf, but, you know, we did what we could and what he was interested in our doing. And so it's, you know, it's quite a story. But that's a pretty dramatic, I think, example of the possibilities of this work. And, you know, when you're working with a group of people in this manner, in the manner that we worked, I think that's quite good. The more the merrier, and at least in the way that we were working for this young man. He lived at least 2 more years that we know of. I know he went back to England, and we didn't hear from him again. And friendships were made. You know, we'd go out to dinner with this guy, and he was able to live a somewhat normal life for far longer than was predicted for him. And so we'll never forget him. And actually, the gift he gave us was a chance to help him, utilizing our own helping spirits. Right. So.
I mean, and, you know, and you know, more and more traditional medicine are, you know, they're curious. They're like, you know, not everyone, but many of you are still skeptics. But still, you know, there are more and more doctors speaking up about the afterlife and, mm-hmm. you know, the miracles yeah. they've seen. And, you know, there are books, you know, Radical Healing was one of them. Like, you know, why do some people get well and some don't? You know, they have the exact same treatments, the same diagnoses, the same, you know, there's so much more to healing than, you know, I started off as a nurse and I learned early on. I was like, I remember them teaching us that, you know, when you take the case history, really pay attention, because in most cases, you know, before it's in expressed in the physical body, it's been in the etheric. You know, it's been in their thinking, and their emotions, and their, you know, something's been out of balance for. And it normally takes around 2 years, you know, for it to be in the physical. Not always, but you know, sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I can remember studying with, you know, I don't know, I've studied with a lot of teachers over the years. I've been blessed with gifted teachers, and I love how you. Even though you have taught over 600 of these workshops, you still remember the day that you came to your teacher, and the devotion and honoring of him is just so, so sweet, you know, to see this. I mean, you know.
Well, we got to be realistic here. You know, we got to.
Yeah, I know, but still, some people forget, you know, they just forget, and, you know.
No, well, look, you know, look, hey, listen, we've had many teachers and from all walks of life, but let me just say this, the shaman is someone who understands that the physical universe is only half the story. The other half is the spirit world, and everything that is has a spiritual component. So, you know, there's Cindy, and there's the spirit of Cindy. There's the tree in my backyard, and the spirit of that tree. There's the house that we live in, and there's the spirit of the house. Now, you know, we spent some time with a 94-year-old shaman years ago who had been brought by the foundation to Northern California, to Sonoma, California. And he performed a ceremony in front of us, and I remember him saying in the course of the ceremony, now he spoke in his native tongue, Olchi, that was translated into Russian, and then Russian eventually into English, but he said, you know, he's going to the spirits for help, and he says to the spirits, I'm not a shaman. I'm just someone asking for help for someone. Now, here's a guy who's been practicing shamanism for maybe 75 or 80 years, and he's saying, hey, I'm not a shaman. I'm just a guy trying to do some help. And I just love that kind of humility.
Right.
Yes. And I think shamanism, at least our approach to it, you know, at the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, you know, promotes that. And, you know, we don't get an ego about this. We just try to... help, and help is there. All you have to do is engage it, you know.
So, listeners, I want to give you contact information. This workshop is going to be held in St. Louis on mm-hmm. October 5th and 6th, and the hours are 9:45 to 6 on Saturday, 9:30 to 5:30 on Sunday. Pre-registration is required. So you can go to the website, which is www.shamantracks.com, and that's amantracks.com.
Right.
You can also call Dana at 410-820-9977. I'll repeat that, 410-820-9977.
And you can
email,
also... Oh, yes, go ahead, please.
Is Dana Cougar at goeaston.net, which is goeaston.net. Now,
yeah.
There's a wonderful article in the September issue of Spirit Seeker. It is on page 4, and and also the ad is with the contact information, everything's right there. But there's a wonderful article on shamanism for creative solutions, and Dana, I'm assuming, well, I don't know where it is, actually. I guess we'll find out when you'll email us information on where it's being held.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. They'll know. It's at a Hampton Inn and a highly rated, actually, number one rated hotel in St. Louis. So, okay, so it's a new hotel. It should be a wonderful meeting room. And don't forget the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, their website, www.shamanism.org. Wonderful articles there, wonderful information, and a full list of workshops being given all over. Actually, the United States. We also have teachers in Asia and you're in Europe. So I hope people, if they're interested, please check it out, and you can learn a lot at the website of the foundation.
So we have a couple more minutes, Dana. Just before we close, I want to thank you for, you've shared a lot in this hour, and, I can just feel, your heart in this work. And, it's interesting. I just, until I read the article, when your information came in, I was like, I had no idea. You don't think about shamans from Siberia, I don't know. I just didn't. I've worked with a lot of Native American healers and all kinds of different indigenous cultures, but it's like, wow. And when you think about the fact that, here are these ancient healers in every culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing. And
well, look, the truth of the matter is that there are spirits. And human beings
everywhere.
Discovered that there are these help, yes, and that there are helping spirits that have great compassion and wisdom, and they can be accessed in what we call the upper world and the lower world. And, of course, there are plenty of helpers in the middle world as well, but the middle world might be more of a mixed bag. And the humans discovered this and ran with it, and then you have this system we call shamanism, that exists in various forms, but there are many similarities between various forms of shamanism. So it's just one of the great discoveries of the human being, the helping spirits.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out with everything that you have, that you're
thank
offering.
You.
And, it's just really, my honor and, privilege to have you as my guest on my show. And just thank you so much for the work you're doing. And,
well, you're really sweet. Thank you. And I look forward to seeing you in person in St. Louis. My wife does, too, on the 5th and 6th of October.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank
and
you,
listeners,
Penny.
Stay tuned. We're going to go right into our second part of the show. And I just want to mention there's several ways that you can support the show. Number one, you can favorite the show on Blog Talk. What that does is you go to the spirituality section. You can actually just go directly to my page, blogtalkradio.com/ Cindy Meyer, spelled CYNDEMEYER. By you favoriting the show, it helps them realize, they look at our stats, they look at the favorites, and they move us closer to the front of the spirituality section. The other thing that is helpful is to send an email to info@spiritseeker.com. We send you a weekly reminder of who our guests are each week on the radio show. We also have the magazine each and every month. We, each week you can just click right on the cover and go right to the magazine. We do not sell our email list. We do allow people who are doing the good work to be a part of our email that we send you, so you'll find out about things in the Midwest, but we also support things throughout the whole U.S. In the 17 years we've been published, we've been online for 15 of those years, so we have quite a readership, throughout the U.S. and into Canada and into Europe. So it's, it's just wonderful. And so do send us an email, info@spiritseeker.com, and then we'll let you know of wonderful events such as this and other happenings. Okay, Dana Robinson, thank you so much. and good night, everyone. But stay tuned for the next show.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.